Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. This is Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. Just last year, we had the good fortune to talk with music producer and author Joe Boyd. Joe Boyd has been in the music industry for a long time. He has worked on recordings by Pink Floyd, Richard Thompson, and R.E.M. And that's just the short list. In 1980, he started Hannibal Records, an independent label responsible for releasing numerous international music albums. Joe's latest project is his new book, And the Roots of Rhythm Remain, A Journey Through Global Music. Joe spent 17 years conducting interviews and studying music from Budapest to Johannesburg. The result is an impressively detailed history of popular music from around the world. Beta's resident musicologist, Steve Gotcher, talked with Joe about this massive undertaking and how a Paul Simon lyric inspired the book's title.
Well, it's a beautiful stanza in that wonderful album. And so much of what I find to be the fingerprint or the watermark of musical cultures is rhythm. When I spoke to Paul Simon, I did a great interview with him. And basically, we agreed. I mean, we had the same feeling that he is really, particularly when he went to Johannesburg, he was really excited about the rhythmic strangeness and the sort of complexity of what he was hearing from these great musicians. I don't know, it just came to me as a perfect line, and that whole stanza. But that line, And the Roots of Rhythm Remain, it kind of sums up what I'm writing about.
This is the story of how we begin to remember. This is the powerful pulsing of love in the vein. After the dream of falling and calling your name out. These are the roots of rhythm, and the roots of rhythm remain.
You start your book by talking about Paul Simon's album Graceland. What kind of impact did it have on introducing people to South African music?
Huge. I mean, South Africa was something that people had known, but often without exactly realizing. The result is that you have music which sounds, as Paul Simon described, he heard this music in his car, and he said it sounded like R&B from a parallel universe. It sounded familiar, but not. And I think that that's, for many people, the toe in the water into the world music scene in the late 80s was first Graceland, then Ladysmith Black Mambazo, then for many, Mahotini and the Mahotella Queens. It was easy for the Western audience to embrace this stuff somehow. And one of the things I wanted to write about in the book was to say, yes, it was easy and you love it and it's great music, but the backstory is very complicated, much more complicated than you might have imagined.
One of the criticisms of Paul Simon, which I have a problem with, is this notion of cultural appropriation where he capitalized on somebody else's music and made a lot of money for himself. And that's criticized as a bad thing. But it seems to me that it introduced the world to these musicians who went on and had their own successes around the world. What do you think about this whole notion of cultural appropriation and its impact?
In a way, I start the book, not exactly with Paul Simon. I started with Malcolm McLaren, who went to South Africa 2 years before Paul Simon, used the same musicians, registered songs that he learned from them with him as composer, and paid them very little. And his record doesn't, it's not a big thing in history because it wasn't that successful. But Paul paid way more money, shared copyright credit when it was the true situation that he had input into the creation of a song from one of the South African musicians. They got co-credit as composers. And I think he behaved, impeccably.
You know, and I think Ry Cooder had a lot to do with bringing Cuban music to the world when he got together with the Buena Vista Social Club and helped put that record out.
Buena Vista Social Club, they got royalties, they toured the world. And there's a quote that I have from Mikhail Bakhtin later in the book that talks about how, in a way, in order to really understand a culture, you have to stand outside it. And I think that many of the most successful and interesting records are made by producers or people who come from the outside, the way Paul Simon did, the way Ry Cooder did, and take a look at a form of music that people within the culture would never take. And the main point that I make in the book is that this story of, quote, cultural appropriation is as old as Methuselah. No music is pure. Every music is mongrel. Every music was created by the intersection of cultures. And particularly, you know, in Europe, every form of music in the Balkans and Central Europe has been transformed by the arrival of Roma people who learn the local melodies and play it better than the locals could.
One of the things that fascinates me the most is this whole notion that new styles and genres are created when music moves from one culture to another and then back again. Can you talk more about how that kind of thing has evolved over the years?
Well, I mean, one of the great examples, of course, centers on James Brown. James Brown was a revolutionary within African-American music, within rhythm and blues, because he took a lot from Latin music, from Cuban music. He added a clave feel, but most important, it was a lot of his music was very modal. It didn't change key very much. He would stay on the same key for whole long stretches of just groove. And that guitar, scratch guitar, is very often follows a kind of clave, you know, 2-beat followed by 3-beat. And there's a quote in the book, James Brown's music was for African Americans proof that Africa really was over there, and that's where we came from, because it really sounded much more like Africa in a way.
Come on, baby. Get in the groove.
And then, of course, it went to Africa, and everybody, groups all across Africa, heard James Brown and went, oh, yeah, we know where this guy's coming from, and transformed their music, and Fela Kuti being one of the great examples. Oh. So you have this circle that keeps going around. And I think, you know, there's lots of compilations now of Nigerian music from the 70s playing funk. And I think that's another thing that I point out in the book is that so much great music was created when people set out to imitate something and fail, but fail gloriously.
Failed in a way that created something entirely new.
Yeah, exactly. Like British art students playing Mississippi Delta blues, you know.
Right, right, right.
You know, that created, you know, the Rolling Stones and, you know, everything else.
You mentioned James Brown, and I was thinking of a record that somebody gave me a cassette of years ago called Cambodia Rocks. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's a bunch of young people like garage bands, whatever that would be in Cambodia, doing James Brown imitations with a Cambodian spin to it.
Well, have you heard, are you familiar with Dengue Fever?
Oh, yes. Yes, they've played here in town a few times.
Right, yeah. No, they're great, you know, and they're a fascinating example of this sort of circular you know, taking this music, this kind of surf, Cambodian surf music.
Right.
And playing it, trying to play it the way the Cambodians did, but creating again something that's new, but with a music that was totally obliterated by Pol Pot. And reviving it, and then stimulating a revival within Cambodia.
Right, you know, exactly.
And they've got an authentic, they got a real a Cambodian woman as their lead singer, and so they sing in Khmer, you know. They really dove in. There's a wonderful documentary about them, Sleepwalking Up the Mekong. It's a terrific film about them on their first visit to Cambodia.
Who are some of the other artists who've helped introduce global sounds to the West?
I guess you could start, you know, you might be able to start with Machito and the Afro-Cuban All-Stars, who set America and the world dancing to Latin music in the 40s and the 50s. One of my favorite pieces of research that I conducted was reading Bill Graham's autobiography, where he talks about being a teenager and going to the Palladium and having his life changed by learning how to dance Latin, and how the greatest moment of his life as a professional was when he played his Tito Puente records for Carlos Santana, and he played him Oye Como Va. And Carlos Santana then had a sort of, you know, world-changing hit that you could hear. I mean, I heard that Oye Como Va by Carlos Santana in the 70s. You could go to any part of the world and hear that coming out of a bar. But also in more recent times, of course, Brian Eno and David Byrne have to take some credit. You know, they've made this crazy record called My Life in the Bush of Ghosts, which was more influential than commercially successful. But they also put a lot of those same ideas into the Talking Heads, because Brian Eno was producing it, and that Remain in Light was such a breath of rhythmic fresh air. And because it's very much based on Afrobeat, you know, it has, but it's not slavishly imitating it, it's just absorbing it. Sometimes the world has a load of questions.
Seems like the world knows nothing at all. What kind of message do you want the reader of your book to come away with?
I certainly hope it's going to lead people to listen to music they've never listened to before. That, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book was because I have shelves full of books about music, and so many of them are about jazz and about R&B and about pop and about, you know, I got books on the Beatles and the Stones and Jarvis Cocker and Miles Davis, and I just felt like there's a big world out there with as many great stories as we have about British and American musicians. And so I want to tell those and just open people's eyes and ears to this big world out there. And also how much we owe this world, how much it has influenced us. You know, that there is no purity. Everything is connected, and we owe so much to people from across the globe, from people outside our culture.
Well, Joe, I have a new thing to add to my bucket list, which I doubt I'm ever going to fulfill, but I would love to sit down and listen to records with you for an evening. That would
well,
be
I'll
a delight.
What you can do, I hope, sooner rather than later, one of what I've just finished doing the audio book, and then I've started a web page which is going to have links to all the music that you read about in the book.
Excellent.
So if you read about something, you'll be able to go to the webpage and just click, and it'll be there.
Joel Boyd, thank you so much for talking with us today. It's been such a delight. Your book, And the Roots of Rhythm Remain, is a brilliant history of music from around the world. Thank you so much for writing it.
Thank you for having me.
Joel Boyd is a veteran music producer and the author of And the Roots of Rhythm Remain, A Journey Through Global Music. He spoke with our own Steve Gotcher. Find out more about Joe's book and world music at wpr.org/beta.
The vibe of Kid A, the paranoia, the sense of alienation, dislocation, that is 2020 more than 2000.
Music critic Stephen Hyden tells us how Radiohead's 2000 album Kid A served as an overture for the 21st century. That's coming up. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.